everybody, and hello, Stephanie.
Well, hey there, Kimberly.
Oh my God, we have so many things to talk about because Trump Titanic, whatever, is going down.
It really is.
But what was I going to say? I just want to announce that we had a guest today. We had Rabia Ochaudhry, but unfortunately, she couldn't make it. She's we tried to get her on twice, and she was unable to do it.
Pull it together.
Yeah, she couldn't pull it together. So we're just going to, one more time. Last show, Charlotte Clymer was supposed to be on, but found out that she was very sick. She, you know, we were worried about her. And then, so after the show, she emailed me, you know, apologetic, saying, I'm so sorry. I woke up this morning with a fever. I had you down for a different time than we had originally planned. So she's going to come back in January. So that's going to, we're going to get that going. But, you know, so once again, we had a guest planned and that guest couldn't make it. So it's just going to be me and Steph. But we've got.
But damn it, we're good enough and we're smart enough and people like us, Kimberly. So we can do this. We can do this together alone.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we do, since people like us, of course, we're going to say if you like the show, please support us. You can you can go to patreon.com/startmeup and then you can, you know, you can support us with $1 or $5, which gets you into And Another Thing or any other dollar amount that you want. And just so you know, some upcoming guests, obviously we've got Charlotte Clymer coming up. We're going to have Molly Jong Fast coming up in the new year. Also Jen Kirkman, comedian.
Oh my God.
Freaking love. And then on December 12th, I'm going to be interviewing Kirsten Johnston from Third Rock from the Sun and CBS's Mom. Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to make it because you've got something planned, but I'm sure we'll have her back.
Damn
absolutely.
It.
So
that, but, you know what? I almost want to ditch my kids for that one, but it's a family thing. I have planned.
She'll come back. I'm sure she'll
come back. I love her. Yeah. I just love, I always have.
Me too.
Loved her as an actor.
Yeah.
I mean, on Third Rock, was she not pure comic genius?
Oh my God,
at
she was perfection
times.
For that character too. She's so funny.
But I love her as a person. Yeah. Like on Twitter today, she's like, why is being a bleeding heart a pejorative?
Yeah, I
like,
saw that.
Do I suck because I care about people?
Right.
Like, yeah, I mean, she's just real.
She's just real. Exactly. She's real. And she loves animals. She mocks the Trump cult.
I love animals.
I know. More than people, mostly.
Just not caged animals,
right,
like our president. That sack of crap.
Well, before we get into all the political stuff, first of all, how was your Thanksgiving?
Okay. It was amazing. You know, Zach and I, my husband Zach, we host every year. It's our thing. That's his family's big holiday. They're not religious in any way. And so they've always gotten together on Thanksgiving, and people come from Southern California and from Washington State. And, you know, now partners are joining, and it's just, it's evolved. We recently lost his wonderful Aunt Ethel to cancer over the summer. And so this was the first year without Ethel. And, but you know, I love my mother-in-law, and Ethel's husband Howie was there, and then their kids, and so the cousins, and we play charades and we eat like pigs for like three solid days. My husband's a phenomenal cook, and so he does like all the heavy lifting. But this year he let the cousins make stuff at their Airbnb and bring side dishes, and I did desserts.
What did you
make?
And
I made the most insane blackberry pie and delightful pumpkin pie, if I do say so myself. I figured out I've got a great crust recipe. If you ever just go with the quick and easy Mark Bittman, How to Cook Everything, beautiful pie crust. It's flaky, it's delicious, it's super buttery, it's amazing.
Yum.
So it was really good. We had a really nice time, although I have to say, it was the first Thanksgiving my mom hasn't been with me, and I missed my mommy.
Wow, you know, that's funny because I had Thanksgiving with my mom and dad for the first time. I guess the last time that happened, I was 3 or 2. So,
wow, how did that go?
It was great. Actually, I mean, it's so wonderful because, you know, my mother moved back east in 2017, and my stepmother and father have been so wonderful, and they've invited her. Even when I wasn't living here, she was invited to all the family functions, which some of the other people in my family are, you know, not blood relatives, but, you know, extended family members weren't really sure how to take that. But I think that my father was just so happy that I was moving back, and he, you know, my mom and dad have always had a cordial relationship. They were never mm-hmm. enemies. You know, it didn't work out, and it was ugly at the time back in, you know, whatever, 71. But, you know, they lived their separate lives. They went their separate ways. She moved out to Southern California, and I'm sure he was pissed because she took me, and he didn't mm-hmm. like that. But mm-hmm. it's not like he ever talked shit about her to me and vice versa. I always felt both parents were very supportive and understanding of the fact that, you know, it would not be good to talk poorly about, you know, either one of them to me. So anyway, now that all this time has gone by, it's an interesting dynamic for me to witness between my mom and dad, because I know my dad is always so concerned about her. He's always asking how she's doing, and, you know, he wants her to have activities and make friends. And so, you know, they, both my stepmom and father, are very welcoming. So it's awesome. You know, it's an awesome thing. And what's interesting too, is I, you know, my endless quest for feeling better, looking better. I was reading up on gluten, and my mom is actually allergic to gluten. And for the longest time, she was under the impression that she had irritable bowel syndrome. And I mean, decades. Turns out she was allergic to gluten. So once she eliminated that from her diet, she no longer had all of the symptoms that you have, which doctors will often misdiagnose you. So anyway, that wasn't what got me going, but I was reading about it, and it's an inflammatory, and some women who go into menopause or even perimenopause will develop a sensitivity to gluten, and it can make you bloated. It can mess with your hormones and all that stuff. So I thought, well, let me cut it out and see what happens. So for Thanksgiving, I made gluten-free chocolate chip cookies, which I have to say, they were very good. And
I saw them. They looked real purdy.
They were really delicious, very buttery. And I will say this, there were no cookies left. There was pie left, but no cookies left. So they were a hit. Everybody ate them.
Good.
So I told my dad, I'm like, okay, I can't have any gluten, so I'll make my own stuffing and I'll make my own gravy and I'll bring it over. And he's like, no, you know, we'll do it. And I was like, well, I don't want to be a bother. No, we'll do it. So I make my gluten-free cookies. They make their gluten-free stuffing and all of that. And then stupid me sits there eating crackers. So there's gluten in the crackers and I don't realize it. And I'm eating the crackers or whatever. So I hadn't had gluten for about maybe two weeks. Went home that night. I thought I was going to die. It was like my mom used to describe before she realized that she had a gluten sensitivity. She used to talk about how she would feel plugged in, as if and I get it, because this is what happened. That night while I was sleeping, I can't say that it was pain, but it was severe discomfort, and it felt like my just like my cells were vibrating. And it was very uncomfortable, and I was having not body aches, but joint aches and stuff like that. So anyway, I've realized. So of course, the next day, no more gluten. I thought, that's it. I have a sensitivity to it. So as you eat it, you build up some kind of a resistance, and once you pull it out, then all of a sudden you feel those effects much stronger than you would if you continue eating it. But what I've been really seeing is that, aside from the fact that I am bloated less than I used to be, I'm really experiencing more flexibility with my body. For the longest time, I used to, when I would bend over, I noticed as I was aging, and I just attributed this to maybe, you know, getting older and arthritis or something like that. If I were to bend over to pick something up from the floor, one of my back legs would go up. And it just kind of started happening naturally. Now I don't have to do that. Now I just simply bend over, pick it up, and I'm fine. Because before, if I bent over, I'd be like, ah, and it would be a struggle to get back up. So I just thought that was kind of fascinating. So I'm going to be gluten-free now. And thankfully, it's very easy. You know, you don't, I think it might be a little bit more difficult at a restaurant. Although most restaurants
just
are
just don't
very,
order the pasta. You can have the freaking potatoes.
But
the
nice thing is they do sell at the store. They have gluten-free pasta, which I've had because I've had it at my mom's, and I really can't tell it. There's a slight difference, but it's so minimal that it's not even noticeable. And mm-hmm. I mean, if you were going to give gluten-free pasta to someone who didn't know, I bet you they wouldn't even be able to tell you. So I thought it was kind of interesting, and I clearly have a sensitivity to it. So so there's that. And then I had Thanksgiving at my dad's house with, you know, the whole clan. And then Bob had gone to see his dad and, you know, his brothers and sisters down in Virginia. And then the following day, we went to Virginia to see his mom. And she has this gorgeous home, this beautiful new home by the lake. And
Bob's mommy?
Yes. Oh, my God. This house is just, it's so beautiful. And so we had another Thanksgiving. So I crammed more food into my face. And so it was good. Overall, it was good. We had both families. We saw everybody. I didn't get to see his dad, and Bob didn't come over to our celebration. But, you know, we figured we've been gone for so long, and, you know, we wanted to accommodate everybody. So this way we got to pretty much accommodate everybody, and everybody's happy. Bob's dad got to see him, and my dad got to see me. So it was good. It was a good holiday. Mm-hmm. So I'm good. Happy about that.
I'm happy to hear that.
Hopefully after, I'm not feeling that great today, and I don't know why, but my mom, I want to go after the show to see my mom, because I have this little funny story. Her friend, Pam, is visiting from Ohio, and Pam and my mom used to work together in the car business, and they were this just power duo, finance managers at a car dealership. And Pam is she's small, and she's kind of like, at least she used to have that pixie haircut. She's almost elfin in her features, like her eyes are swept up, and she's cute. She's very cute. And she's tiny, but she's got this very strong voice.
Interesting.
And so one time she called me up and she's like, "Hi, Kimberly, can I speak to your mom? It's mucho importante." I fucking love that story, and I say mucho importante all the time. And it was just the way she said it. It's
That's
mucho
so
importante.
Perfecto mundo. One moment, Pam.
Oh my God, she said it's like this huge voice coming out of this tiny little woman who's blonde and sweet looking. So, but she's awesome, and so I'm really interested in visiting with her. I haven't seen her since I was a teenager. So there's that. Anyway, so that's pretty much it. There's all the holiday stuff, and you know, I think we can talk about politics now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh my God, Manafort is a mole.
Manafort's a mole. So I had to just over the holiday, I decided to take a little step back from Twitter. Like I have to, by the way, when we're done with this podcast, I'm going to delete my Facebook accounts.
Really?
Yeah, I'm done.
Wow.
First of all, I hate it. I watched people getting on Facebook during the holiday, like almost like they would breathe.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I find that odd that why can't we just interact? Like, do we really have to post this shit and that shit? Like, and I love, you know, I love that people who use Facebook, I love them, and I was a Facebook user too, but I don't want to be that beholden to it.
Does it have anything to do with Zuckerberg?
Myself a little bit beholden to Twitter in similar ways. You know, I'm not posting pictures of myself every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But I am checking that shit.
Yeah.
And I want to, like, I'm desperate for not to see, you know, somebody's post of their Thanksgiving pie, but I'm desperate to find out if the president's going down, you know, and I needed to take a little break from that. So I did a bit.
So it wasn't about Zuckerberg wanting to get rid of
Facebook? Well, Zuckerberg's a piece of, I think they've completely mismanaged Facebook. I think that an election was thrown because of the mismanagement of Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I also hate how people are so desperately connected to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This mismanaged, jacked up platform that really, you know, I connected with all the people I want to connect with, and now I know how to find them other ways. Mm-hmm. So I'm done. Mm-hmm. Like it served its purpose, and then it ruined lives. And I don't want to feed into it anymore. Plus, they charged me for something, and
Facebook?
I haven't done. Yeah, because I have a Lady Brain, you know, from the Lady Brain show. Just mm-hmm. It's still there. There are, you know, tons of followers, tons for me, and I haven't gotten around to dissolving the account. Mm-hmm. And then I got charged for something, like I did an ad boost, and I haven't touched that account in months.
Wow.
So I got to figure that out too.
Yeah.
Anyway, wow. I'm just done. I'm done. Wow. So back to Twitter. It was nice to take a little bit of a breather. Mm-hmm. And then I've been, you know, kind of dipping my toe back in the water a little bit here and there over the last couple of days. And also watching a little bit of MSNBC. I always like to read the paper. So that's kind of nice to stay connected that way. And there's mm-hmm. no, you know, there's no commitment to having
there's
to
no
respond.
Trolls.
Well, there's no, I don't feel compelled to respond, and I can't respond to a Washington Post article that I read on my app. You know, that's good.
Yeah.
But last night, the amazing Jill Winebanks, like, how can we get her? How can we get her on this show?
She
like that's a goal for me. You know, that and Walt Schaub, who he liked a couple things I said yesterday in response to something he put up. So I'm going to hit him up, by the way, Kimberly. I'm just putting it out there. But Jill Winebanks said, here, hold on. She said that she called on the last word, she called, what's his face, Manafort, a double agent, right? He's mm-hmm. working for Mueller and Trump. Mm-hmm. And Frank Fugluzzi came on and corrected her. And he said, no. He's a triple agent because he's also working for Russia. And she's like, Frank is right.
Wow.
And so this is Jill Winebanks.
Yeah.
This isn't Kimberly and Steph who do a lot of reading and news post watching. This is Jill Winebanks, Watergate badass.
Yeah.
Who just called Paul Manafort a triple agent.
And I love her pins, gotta say. I mean,
did you see the one with the unwoven hair?
Yes.
What and then the cowardly lion she wore last lion, night because she said, she goes, his tweets today prove how frightened and weak he is. The cowardly lion is Trump. Now Trump is and then we have to go back to this Manafort shit, but
yeah.
Now Trump's retweeting Trump train memes.
Yes, I
saw
that.
The Trump train is one of the most unhinged.
Yeah, I mean, and the meme that he posted was like Hillary and Mueller behind bars.
And Rosenstein, Stoon behind bars. Like, okay, let's go back to Frank Fugluzzi, Jill Winebanks, and Triple Agent Manafort. First of all, I love Frank Fugluzzi. Like, that dude gives me, he makes me feel safe. Just looking at him, he's handsome. He's got those pimp-colored suits on, you know? Like, and he's just so smart, and he knows what the hell he's talking about. Like, is shit not going down?
I think so. You know, interestingly, let me find it. Rick Wilson wrote a great article, basically just talking about, Trump is losing it because the writing is on the wall.
Right.
And it's called Sensing Defeat, Trump Cries Witch Hunt. And what's really interesting and great about all this, let me get to this little paragraph here. But he's, you know, he's just detailing Trump's breakdown. And he describes him, as my page takes forever to come up, he says, okay, Donald Trump is a princeling who was raised in luxury, never held accountable for any of his countless personal and business betrayals and failures, and who literally lived in a golden tower for most of his life, is not good with stress. His rage tweeting shows us that he knows he can't juggle all the crises steaming toward him, that he knows his astounding power to distort reality for his followers won't shield him from the political, legal, and personal perils closing in on him. Playtime is over, and Donald doesn't like it.
No,
and
he doesn't.
That's exactly what's going on. And then even Horse Whisperer did this great thread about how narcissists behave when they see the writing on the wall. I posted that on my Twitter wall, so I would go check that. It's a great Twitter thread from Horse Whisperer, and she starts it off super quick one on what we're seeing from Trump and what's likely to come. So she basically just talks about he's at that phase where it's the most bonkers part of the cycle because he sees all of this happening, and narcissists can't deal with people looking down on them, and they can't deal with trouble coming their way, and I think the word she used was excruciating. It's like excruciating.
Why do you keep saying she? Do you know something I don't know?
I think it's Molly Jungfest.
Do you really?
I don't know, but you know, I think it is. I have this sneaking suspicion. I could totally be wrong there, but I think it's her. She's like a Twitter.
I'm in love with her.
I know.
I just admire her.
Well, did you read that she just wrote this great article in the Wall Street Journal about the late term abortion she didn't want? And it's just a fantastic piece. And what I really like about her, and I know we're going off on a tangent here, but is that she's a liberal, but she appeals to people on both sides of the aisle. And here she is writing an opinion about abortion in the Wall Street Journal. I think that she could get away with it because in the end, I mean, I'm like, spoiler, she didn't have an abortion. But she and her husband found out that her eventual son might have had this particular, I don't know, very rare disease. And in the end, they found out that he didn't. But I think it was during the time that she was in the later stages. And she was very upset about this. She wanted this child. And she talks about how she was raised, you know, among intellectualist feminists who initially were like, why aren't you just going to have an abortion? And she was like, no, I want to have this child. And so this is a great piece. And I just love the fact that she's able to mock and call out the administration, but she does so in a way that's palatable for both sides, I think. You know what I mean? And I mean, both sides, meaning the side, you know, conservatives who don't like Trump. Obviously, MAGA people aren't going to appreciate her. But, you know, people like Rick Wilson and, you know, other conservatives who are anti-Trump have, you know, they respect her. So anyway, and yeah, I think it could be her. I mean, I know she runs a couple of other accounts that are not her name. And so I think Horse Whisperer might be one of them. But it's just
how much do we miss Frederick Douglass?
I know, huh?
I love Freddie D.
She's just like a Twitter machine.
She's a Twitter machine.
It's like she was born to do it because she's so highly entertaining. But anyway, back to Manafort. I mean, I wonder what's going to happen because this is what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that, okay, well, you know, Trump might pardon him. He got away with shit for his entire life.
Yeah, let's talk about that because I don't understand what would happen. Like, I'm waiting for there to be a bad side to that, like a bad for Trump. If he pardons Manafort, yes, he's admitting guilt, of course, but there are no repercussions for him. So,
right.
How do we benefit from that?
This is my
you
guess.
With me?
I'm guessing this, and I don't know, but I mean, and from what I hear from other people talking about it. What I hear is that pardoning him wouldn't look good. And the thing is that we can argue, so what? But we just had a big, beautiful blue wave. So the writing is pretty much on the wall for Republicans for 2020. What they're seeing is a rejection of Trumpism and Trump himself. And they are realizing that sticking by him is not a winning strategy. And if he goes on to pardon Manafort, when whatever comes out is going to be so damning. I mean, we already know some things, but you know, if we're filled in on the whole story, or at least a huge portion of the story before the 2020 elections, and he gets pardoned, then again, Republicans are going to have to deal with, you know, not only are they dealing with the big, beautiful blue wave, you know, they've got these states that he won, that are experiencing, you know, the states we thought Hillary was going to take, that are experiencing, you know, layoffs with car manufacturers and people are experiencing, you know, farmers are experiencing issues with, you know, his tariffs and everything that he's doing is not good for this country.
Right.
Economically speaking.
So there's no immediate bringing of the pain on the Trump team if he pardons.
I don't
Manafort.
Know
it's
that
more
there
of
is.
Like a 2020.
But keep
you
in
know,
mind,
you Republicans are all hosed in 2020.
Right,
is
but
what
then
it is.
But what they'll want to do is Republicans will want to be strategic, and so they're not going to just turn their back on him on October, you know, in October 2020. Mm-hmm. They're going to start that process early if he really looks bad. But keep in mind that Manafort picked Pence. So there's that.
Yes, I know.
For whatever that's worth.
We talked about that a year ago.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't know what that means because we've heard nothing about Pence. Nothing. And, you know, I mean, oh, other than speculation and, you know, I wonder what's going to happen there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how far things would go. I mean, I will say that one of the things that, and I don't think that they, I don't know that they would, the House would impeach Donald Trump for pardoning Manafort, but whatever comes out, you know, as a result of the investigation about Manafort might be, you know, reasons to impeach. So mm-hmm. it would, do I see a Republican Senate ousting him? Probably not. I don't know where their benefit would be doing that, because if they are left with Pence, I mean, it would really, again, depend on what we're finding out in the investigation. But I mean, they're not going to oust both of them, because who's the next in line? Nancy.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't see any kind of ousting of Trump before 2020. Right. But it'll just be interesting. And plus, I mean, what does the GOP have to benefit from a Pence 2020 ticket? Seriously? I mean, he is the most, and adding on to that, guess who might be running now? Beto. Yeah. You know, he's like, I haven't made up my mind. First, no. Now I'm thinking about it, leading to I'm running. So,
okay.
You know,
let's talk. Can we talk about that?
Of course.
All right. I want a visionary, a decent, civil rights, equal rights believing, public servant with some political experience getting shit done. Mm-hmm. Someone who could handle themselves across the table from another world leader, mm-hmm. a Macron, what's her name? Merkel. Oh mm-hmm. God, I'm in love with that woman too. Jesus, the facial expressions alone. You know, someone who could sit across from Putin, or, you know, stand our ground and have America's best interests at heart, knowing that we have a lot of damage control and a lot of repair that needs to be done as well. It's not going to be an easy job. I'm concerned. Like, I would love Beto. Oh my God, please. I'd do anything to have a Beto as president. There are so many of them I'd love to see. Mm-hmm. I'd be thrilled with any of the people besides Bernie. And I don't want Hillary to run again. I think that ship has sailed. It's time to move on. Mm-hmm. New blood. I'm not opposed to a Joe Biden. People talk about his age. The dude is fit as a fiddle and was the vice president of the United States for 8 of the best years this country has ever seen. No problem with a Biden running. As long as he puts a kick-ass VP to whom he can hand the mantle to after 4 years and say, and now you're up for 8. Mm-hmm. A Kamala Harris, an Amy Klobuchar. I'm not so sure about Elizabeth Warren, though don't get me wrong, if she gets the nomination, I'm all about it.
I'm all about any Democrat getting the nomination.
Me too, me too.
But then, of course, there's preferences.
And then there are preferences, yes. Would I love to see an amazing woman be our president? Hell yes. I was ready for that 2 years ago when I was campaigning all over creation for Hillary Clinton. She was the most qualified candidate, mm-hmm. and you know, end of discussion. Is this stupid ass country? And I'm putting even the sane ones into the pile. But are the people of this country ready to have a woman as president? No. Jane Mayer last night tweeted that only 45% of American men are comfortable with having a woman as president.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that 55% of American men are insecure dumbasses?
Yes.
Yes.
You know, right? So that's disturbing to me. Mm-hmm. I want to win in 2020, okay? And if that means that we have to table putting a woman in the White House or putting forth a woman to be in the White House, then I have to say I'm going to table it. I'm for tabling it, because right now we need a Democrat in the White House in 2020. We need a Democratic Senate, and we need to spend the next generation fixing all the shit that the Republicans and that the Trump administration has screwed up.
Well, let me counter that a
little bit. Please interject.
First of all, Hillary got 3 million more votes. And so when we say that we're not ready for a woman president, I don't buy that. Because of course there's going to be stupid men who are going to say that they're not ready for it, because there's still patriarchy, there's still misogyny, even you know, even among liberal men, even among liberal women, there's still misogyny. But you know, I believe that the reason why Hillary lost is because of this, you know, thank you again, Facebook, this coordinated effort to, you know, they had an easy target because Hillary Clinton came with decades of right-wing baggage, and then the Russians wrote a whole bunch of bullshit about her. We got, and it fed the far left, and it fed, you know, independents, and it fed obviously all the people who were interested in Trump who never would have voted for her anyway. But you know, you had some of those Obama voters who were disgruntled and they wound up voting for Trump. And I'm sure part of the reason they were so disgusted with Hillary is because of the decades and decades and decades of smears. Now, I understand there were some off-putting either mannerisms or choices that she made, but that should not have led to a vote for Donald Trump. I think in those cases, people who witnessed her answering a question that in a way they didn't like or whatever, I just don't like her. That was so, people would just say, I don't like her, or she lies, or whatever. And then they wouldn't go farther. So clearly to me, they were just going on the smears, and, and it has an effect. The Republican Party is very successful at dirty tricks and smears. And when they decide to go after somebody, they can be quite successful. And, just a little tiny side note, it's just like the term liberal and just like the term feminism. They take these terms and they change them up and they make them dirty. And then, unfortunately, liberals allow that to happen. And they go, okay, we're going to call ourselves progressives now. How long before progressive becomes a dirty word? And then we're going to have to find another one. That's bullshit. I reject that notion. I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive. I'm a feminist. And if you don't like it and you can't take it, then you have been manipulated by the Republican Party. So those three states that, and what were they, Michigan,
Ohio
and Pennsylvania, should have gone to Hillary. And those three states were targeted specifically by the Russians. So he won the Electoral College. She won the popular vote. Now, the other thing that I have to say about this is the woman who fought so hard, there was a number of women. But the one who stands out that fought for women's suffrage was Alice Paul. And during her entire effort to get women the right to vote, she was told by men that basically women had to sit this one out. So I, you know, and I go back to Alice Paul every time, and I go back to, oh God, now I'm forgetting her name, Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks didn't wait for a man to escort her to the front of the bus. She took it. So I think America is plenty ready for a woman. It just depends on a number of factors. It depends on who that woman is. And I'm with you on the Elizabeth Warren. I will wholeheartedly enthusiastically give her my vote if she becomes the nominee. I'm not sure she is the strongest candidate, but as
who?
Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I see some possible, I don't know. I don't want to say flaws. I mean, obviously, whoever it is, they're going to go after. And if it's a woman, they're going to go after her in their very specific way that they will go after. They're going to use misogyny. But I think
it's their number one weapon.
Exactly. But I think the thing about Elizabeth Warren, even though she's a fighter and she goes back, there's a softness about her that concerns me. I don't know if that's exactly the anti-Trump, or I should say the opposite of Trump, that we need, because there's different variations of opposite of Trump. And I say, like with Kamala Lopez, I think she needs to figure out, or she's going to need some polishing as far as how to go out in front of people and speak in a way that is inspirational, like because we need somebody to speak to us like Obama did. And I think that's why Beto is so attractive. And
yes.
I'm with you on it. Ideally, we want somebody who's had a lot of, you know, experience and has relationships and knows how things work. But the smart person, and I think Beto is smart, is going to align himself or herself with people who will direct them and guide them, unlike the guy who's in office right now. He's going to, Beto would align himself with people who know what they're talking about, with experts, and you know, he'll basically have to learn as he goes, as any president would. So I'm not so quick to say that, even though, you know, you've got these polls that are telling us that American men aren't ready, American women make up more than, you know, there's more women than men. Obviously, there's conservative women in there, so we can't count on all those conservative women. But we can count on more women when we look at what's just happened in the midterms. The I can't remember the amount of people who voted, but it basically is rivaling a presidential election. So I think that it's entirely possible. And I think that we're going to see a lot of candidates in 2020. And I honestly believe the best one will emerge. You know, I mean, I don't think that there's going to be, of course, we're going to hear about DNC cheating again, especially if Bernie runs. And I think he will. I do think he's going to run.
I can't take it.
I know. But it's going to be different this time, because last time it was just Bernie and Hillary and then whoever that guy was, who I don't even remember his name. There's two of them. There was Martin O'Malley and then the independent guy, who was pretty much, he's a Marine and his name escapes me, but he was so uninteresting and he's like pro-gun and nobody gave a shit about him. Martin O'Malley was this big yawn to the Democrats, and it was really just between Bernie and Hillary. And so I said this before, and so pardon me if I said it on this show because I don't even know where I've said it, but Bernie had two very strong advantages in 2016, which he will not have going into 2020, which is, number one, he was running against Hillary, who had, you know, decades of baggage, and number two, he didn't have anybody else, you know, and oh, number three, his main, aside from, you know, his platform of single payer, which I'm all for his platform, single payer and raise the minimum wage and equality and all of that, his main strategy was pointing at the Democrats and saying, you don't know how to win elections. Well, we just proved that was just proved wrong in this month. We won big. So he, you know, and the Bernie-crats, the people who were running, you know, I guess there was Indivisible and a couple other sites that were set up to teach people how to run for office, you know, line by line, do this and follow this code. And I believe that there was also, and I don't know if I'm correct on the names here, but there was one, and I don't know who put it out, but it was just like a general one, or it was out, whether it was the DNC or Democrats or whatever. And then there was the Bernie, here's how we win. Well, only a few of them won, and they won in blue states. But the other side of the Democratic, aisle, were Democrats who ran on this Indivisible thing, which, you know, Democrats ran in red states and flipped those states. And it was not with the strong progressive message that Bernie was promoting, because those states right now aren't ready for that. You have to go slow. You take baby steps. You don't run in screaming single payer or, you know, free college when people don't understand what that means in a red state where all they think is liberals just want free shit and they don't get it yet. You can't run on that. You have to run on what your constituents want. And I think that that's what Bernie missed. And so anyway, just to finish this up, I don't think that he's going to have the same kind of, and he's going to have the same talking points. So I think he's going to come off as tired and he'll have his fan base like he always had. But I just don't see him being the same kind of spoiler like he was in 2016.
Okay.
That's my opinion. It doesn't mean I'm right.
No, I just want him to stay out of it altogether. I appreciate that. And I agree with everything you said, but I just want him to go away.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people do, but I don't believe he will. Although, you know, if you follow Jen Kirkman on Twitter, she's back at her, you know, occasionally she takes breaks from Bernie and Tad Devine, but she's back on a roll and she's got a few threads going and she's asking questions, because it was interesting last night when I was watching Rachel Maddow and the story was breaking that, you know, Manafort's basically this mole whose lawyers were feeding information to Trump's lawyers about what he was telling Mueller. Every picture had, you know, of of Paul and everybody, there was Tad Devine. And Tad Devine is was connected to Paul Manafort. They both worked together in Ukraine. So follow her feed if you want to get more information. I'm not the one to talk about it. But, you know, there might be some stuff about, you know, Bernie Sanders that will be coming out. And not that he's a target or anything like that, but he benefited from that Russian interference, the Russian attack, I should say. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, he used some of the, one of the things that she pointed out was the rigged system. And this was, you know, Tad Devine was Bernie Sanders, either like campaign manager or ran the campaign. So some of these talking points were very specific to what Trump was saying. And then even Trump was going light on Bernie and saying how much he wanted to run. I think he said that he wanted to run against Bernie or I can't run against Bernie because the DNC is rigged. And then you hear Bernie saying everything is rigged. So she's putting these things together and it's kind of an interesting little take. So I don't know what's going to come out with the investigation, but we might be hearing something along the lines of either Tad Devine, having play. I know that he was talking to Mueller, and not that, again, I don't believe Tad Devine was a target per se, but he was cooperating with Mueller and giving him information, anything he knew. So who knows? Who knows what's actually going to come out? I mean, I just don't think Bernie's going to be the same kind of a threat that he was in 2020. And then also, yeah. You know what, to your point about not being ready for women, I will say that I think it's kind of fascinating what's happening with Ocasio-Cortez and Nancy Pelosi. I was critical of Ocasio-Cortez going to that climate protest right after she won. And I'm gonna pull back a little bit on that. I think it's easy to say she should have just gone to Nancy Pelosi and said, hey, I want to be on the committee. But what she was doing was not protesting Pelosi. She was basically doing what she was campaigning on, saying, I'm standing with the people. We have to fix our climate and I'm with you. And so I will scale back on what I was saying. I do believe that when you're new, you have to walk a fine line. And I saw her on Chris Hayes the other night, and everything she said I thought was great. And one of the things that she's doing is she's basically just chronicling her experience right now with, you know, putting coin slots into the washer and dryer and saying, see, I'm just like you. Or she's walking through the halls of Congress and making little videos. And she's saying the reason she's doing that is because she wants people to see it's not this like big mysterious job. It's something that you can do too. It's not this us versus them. It'll make people more interested in getting involved. And I think that's pretty cool. There's a few things that I'm not in love with, but I'm not going to focus on them right now. I kind of want to wait and see how she conducts herself. But what I find fascinating is just like with Pelosi, first of all, the Republicans are shitting their pants over her. If you go to Chicks on the Right, every other post is some kind of, you know, we hate Ocasio-Cortez. They are, and they put up memes with her distorted face. They make her eyes look bigger and her teeth look bigger, and they try to make her look crazy. And they are so frightened of her. It's just unbelievable. So, and somebody on Twitter had said something along the lines of, you know, if in 10 years you hate Ocasio-Cortez and you're not really sure why, pay attention to what the Republicans are doing to her right now. And the same thing can be said for Hillary Clinton. The same thing could be said for Pelosi. And so it's like you've got these, there are some people who are maybe not in love with Cortez and they're not sure whether they can trust her. And then, of course, there's the full on, we love her, she's great. Same thing with Pelosi. On the Democratic side, she's got the camp of, okay, we don't really like Pelosi, although I think it's much smaller. And then we've got the team Pelosi. But I think these two women, even though there's a significant age difference, these are two strong, strong liberal women. And look at the shit they're getting. I mean, it does go back to what you're saying. It's like, is America ready for a woman? Well, the only way we're going to be ready for women is when we just push our way through. You know, I mean, Roseanne has really fallen from grace, but one of the quotes is, you don't ask for power, you just take it. You just take it. So I feel like there's this part of me that does not want to promote the idea that we're not ready, because we'll never be ready. It's just got to happen. It's just like, what would you have said in 2006, is America ready for a black president? I'm sure the answer would be no, we're not. And then look what happened in 2008.
Yeah, baby.
So, you know, I mean, there's something like that to consider. You know, I mean,
well, we still have a lot of I think women. What makes me sad and what gives me I'm so torn because I feel like I'm throwing in the towel a little bit when I say we're not ready for a woman president. So I'm just going to get behind the man rather than fight for a qualified woman. Mm-hmm. And that makes me feel defeated. It makes me feel
sad. But you really don't have to, because we've got the primaries to go through. And it's not like, I mean, I think if you just base your choice on who you think is going to win, I think that's the best way to go. Who's got
the best...
Well,
that's what we have to do.
Right.
And that's what we have to do.
It's not about...
Because that's my point. That's what pisses me off so much, is that that's what we're basing our choice on. Not because we know that 55%... of people with penises cannot get behind a woman. So we just have to once again take a fucking back seat.
Yeah.
That's what I'm sick of.
Yeah, well,
that's
I'm sick of it too. But when we have the primaries, first of all, we're going to have like 25 different candidates who are up there. And they're all going to be saying their thing. And so if I think Kamala Harris has the best argument and the best shot, I'll put my weight behind her. If I think Beto has the best shot, I'll put it behind him. But, you know, and that's just going to be in the primaries, because then we'll see what happens during the general. And,
okay.
The general is the scariest part, but we're just going to have to deal with it. You know, we'll see who emerges. We'll see who emerges.
Well, let me tell you why I'm fretting, because there's something that I just saw. You know, Congresswoman Barbara Lee is my representative mm-hmm. in California. That woman has done more for people of color, people who live below the, you know, who live in poverty, people who are underrepresented. She's the only person that said no to the Iraq War. Mm-hmm. This is a woman who was running for the number four leadership position in Congress, the Democratic caucus. And she lost to Hakeem Jeffries, who's 48 years old, a black man from New York State. I think he represents Brooklyn, if I'm not mistaken. But Barbara Lee's 72 years old, and she's a woman who's done the work, who's been there, who fought the NAACP at the age of 14 so she could be a cheerleader at her Texas high school, who has lived in the Jim Crow South, who has risen above, who did the work to get where she is, who continues to do the work. But because she's a woman and because she's 72 years of age, she lost to a younger man, because people just aren't willing to put to put their weight behind a woman of color who's of retirement age, mm-hmm. regardless of who she is or what she's done or what she stands for or how much energy she has. And I can attest to how much energy she has, because she stood in my goddamn living room and told the story and was out campaigning across the United States with Beto, with Stacey Abrams, in unheard of congressional districts where no representative has ever set foot, because the people of color who live there are too poor to deserve their time. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is what pisses me off. This is what fuels my fire. This is what, you know, I'm sure Hakeem Jeffries is a very capable man, but I cannot ignore the fact that a black woman who is 72 years old, who has done the work decade after decade after decade for people who no one has ever even bothered to speak to, engage with, and represent. Mm-hmm. This is shit, and it irks me, and it makes me feel defeated, and quite honestly furious.
Well, okay? You know what? You're right to feel that way, but I kind of look at it like, I always go back to Alice Paul. Always, she's the one who wrote the Equal Rights Amendment, and it still hasn't been ratified. You know, mm-hmm. she got the 19th Amendment passed. She got women the right to vote, but the whole way, all she heard was how it wasn't going to happen. She experienced violence. She experienced getting arrested. They put her in, so then she went on strike and refused to eat. So they put her in a straitjacket and this like metal contraption down her throat and force-fed her raw eggs until she vomited blood. But she's like, fuck it, I am not listening to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to keep going. And I think that's kind of the spirit. I think that, yes, we definitely have an issue and a problem. And it would concern me if the front runner and if the nominee is a woman. Because I'm like, are we going to be able to, are we going to be able to win?
We don't have it in us. But I think we do. Yeah.
I think we do have it in us. We had it in us with Hillary. It was the electoral.
But we didn't get it done.
But it was the electoral college.
But that's the way it is. It's people couldn't go in there. And they couldn't vote for a woman for president.
Well, they couldn't vote for Hillary.
Or they couldn't vote for Hillary Clinton, given her baggage, or whatever.
But they went in there
and they held their nose and they voted for a freaking accused child rapist, an admitted pussy grabber, an admitted racist, bankrupt, failed businessman, draft dodger, because they couldn't vote for a woman. I'm sorry.
Right, and you're right, but this is also a different election. Because now, the one thing that's beneficial from Hillary Clinton losing is the fact that this woke a lot of people up. Unfortunately, our country has a history of low turnout in midterm elections. This midterm election changed that. It blew out records. Now, granted, we had a great time in 2006. And, you know, if we're fortunate enough to win, keep the House, win back the Senate, and get a Democratic president in, then it's just going to be a matter of time before apathy sets in again, because everybody's going to be comfortable and they're not going to pay attention and they're not going to understand. But this presidency woke up a lot of people, specifically young people. You've got Emma Gonzalez and David Hogg leading this charge for young people so that they understand the consequences of not voting. You've got a lot of women who decided after Hillary lost to run for office. They ran and they won. Not all of them, mm-hmm. but a lot of them did. So now, going into 2020, we don't have the same kind of if I just throw my vote to Jill Stein, or if I don't vote, she's probably going to win anyway. We don't have that attitude anymore. Yes, there was a lot of people who voted for Obama, who voted for Trump, and they thought things were going to get better. They don't like Trump anymore. What Trump has done has given us an opportunity, even though it's all horrid, he's given us an opportunity to see why it's so important to pay attention to elections, mm-hmm. why it's so important to get involved. So I'm totally with you, and I get it, because it will be a frightening proposition if we have a woman who's going to emerge as the 2020 candidate. But at the same time, we don't know who that's going to be yet. We don't know what kind of message is going to be put forth. And I think we have a fresh perspective on why it's important to take this, you know, what we'll have to be afraid of once again is Russian interference. And by the way, I don't know if you can hear that mailing, but it's Miranda.
My kitty. Oh, Miranda.
She's meowing. I think she felt a little, we spent a night away from home and she was alone the whole time. And I think she's feeling a little insecure. So, you know, she's neurotic.
Just give her a nice pet.
Oh, trust me. She gets them, but she's like, I need you to pay attention to me now.
Of course.
Anyway, so, you know, that's going to bring me that after we've just had this very serious conversation, I want to talk about our new sponsor, which is, the Willow Grove. And,
yes,
the Willow Grove is awesome because I want to preface this with, if you're into natural organic ingredients, you're going to love these products. Everything.
Yes, love the Willow Grove.
And let me just say that there are in so many products in the store, there are I can't remember what they're called, some kind of xenoestrogens. So xenoestrogens, you get these out, you know, when you're driving from exhaust fumes and things like that. So what these do is they are kind of like mimicking hormones, and they get into your system and they throw your hormones all out of whack. So Willow Grove is all, you know, organic or natural products. They contain no parabens, no xenoestrogens. And all products are scented with only essential oils, never any artificial fragrances.
And they smell so freaking delicious.
Yes, especially the citrus. The citrus is great because I think it's, I'm going to look up, I know that it's grapefruit, orange, lemon, and I have to find out the other thing, but it's...
Isn't there a minty one?
There's the minty one.
Yeah, and they smell like... We have one in the soap dish in our downstairs bathroom, which also is a laundry room, and it's just, I mean, you know, dog goes in there and stuff. That room smells phenomenal from the bar of soap. And then I've got backup bars of soap in the little medicine cabinet in there. I open that up and then it just wafts. Like, it's so legit, but it's not overpowering in a gross, like, Febreze-y sort of way.
Right.
It's so clean and you feel like the quality of the products, the lotions, you know that you're putting good things on your body. It feels better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not heavily perfumed. It's naturally scented.
It's natural. And here it is. It's lemon, lime, grapefruit, and orange. So this citrus burst, it's like you said, it's clean. And the great thing about the lotion is it's not sticky. So you're not going to, as they say, you won't be left feeling like a buttered turkey. That's one thing that I'm very careful with my lotions, because I like a lotion that moisturizes without feeling greasy.
And right. How gross is it when you lotion up and then like the Eucerin that you had on your elbows is now suddenly all over the desk.
Yes.
And you're trying to have conversation with someone about something important. And you're just like, you just greased up everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you don't get that with the Willow Grove. Not with the Willow Grove.
No.
Certified organic, natural, just clean. Like, animals are not used to find out whether or not this works. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They do everything, the massage oils, lip balms, muscle and joint salves, the eye pillow.
I was just going to say, take me to heaven. Oh my God. I've got the Looking for Lavender eye pillow. And
mm-hmm,
I just,
me too.
I like to put it on after I've done a workout, which I want to talk about in my, and another thing segment, my new workout, but I'm working out really hard now. And so I like to use the eye pillow, right after. I just lay there for a minute after I've done all my stretching, and the aroma, and I think there's like flaxseed in there. It just, it calms me and it makes me feel so relaxed. It's like the perfect way to end a really hard workout.
Yes. And one other thing to make you feel good about using any of the Willow Grove's products is their ingredients are ethically harvested.
Yeah. That's
so the products are both good for you and good for the environment, because they know what science is. They believe in taking care of all living things and making sure that they're putting wonderful, nurturing, good for you stuff on your eyes, on your mouth, on your joints, on your body. It's such a cool company, and it's a small family-owned business.
Yeah, and so it's Christmas, and it's a good time to order stuff for your friends and family who like
natural stuff.
For the holidays, it's the perfect time. Mm-hmm. Most of the products are vegan, although some contain beeswax, but they're all natural. And again, I mean, it's Christmas time. So if you've got somebody on your Christmas list who likes all
anybody.
This... Yeah, whether they like the natural products or someone who's just used to using the, you know, grocery store stuff, give them this.
Yeah, right.
Show them the difference, because it really is. It's not just like going to, you know, the department store or you know, the grocery store and buying something. This is natural.
Like, this is grassroots marketing, you know. Yeah. We're talking to you about these amazing products that the Willow Grove makes.
And it's an American product.
Exactly. And, you know, load up, go to thewillowgrove.com. It's a $5 flat rate shipping on orders under $50, all in the continental U.S. Orders over 50 have free shipping. But if you enter code SMU, start me up, SMU 2018, you'll get 15% off of all products. So it's really kind of perfect. I don't know if you work in an office or you've got, you know, that aunt that's hard to buy for, or, you know, your next door neighbor who you're making some toasted sugar pecans for, throw in a bar of the Willow Grove soap. These people that receive this are going to be blown away, just as Kimberly and I have been. And then they're going to turn around and buy more and spread the love. And then the Willow Grove is doing, you know, doing right. We're doing right. You're feeling right. You're smelling right. It's all good.
And, you know, just before I end, the spritzers are cool, because you can use them on yourself or like on your pillow or like as an air freshener. And again, like you said, it's not like Febreze. It's totally natural. So the lavender is great. The lavender is great in your bedroom, because it's like calming. aroma. So for it's sure. great for sleep. So anyway, yeah. So again, that was $50. If you order $50, you get free shipping in the continental U.S. And it's $5 flat rate. So it's a great, you know, stocking stuffer. And even though we're not local, buy local in that it's online, it's just two people and they're trying to make some really great products.
Yay.
So there's that.
There's that. By the way, thewillowgrove.com, enter SMU 2018 for 15% off of all products.
Yes.
Do it. You'll be glad you did.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to wrap this up then. And then we're going to go over to end another thing. And just so you know, we're going to be discussing some of the women, since we're talking about women here, some of the women that have inspired us and, you know, some different fun things that we're going to put in there.
Yeah.
So come over and join us. And if you want to come over and listen and you're not already a subscriber, it's $5.
Subscribe.
You get you in. Subscribe. We'll see you on the other side.
We would appreciate
it. Next show, Kristen Johnston on December 12th.